Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight. Happy day after April Fool's Day, I guess. I don't know. You know, I don't have Chase's calendar in front of me to tell you what every day has some kind of weird significance.
You know, it's interesting. There was a time in my life when April Fool's Day, you could count on somebody pulling a prank. It was just one of those things. But the world is so serious and so dangerous right now, and people are so preoccupied with the realities of life. I didn't see anybody pulling any April 1st pranks. Now, I'm sure they were out there.
Well, we got a big one in the White House.
That's true.
Joe Biden. Well, wait, no, he's not a prank. He's a crank. So, yeah. Well, he's a prank crank. I don't know. It's not good.
You see where Al Roker, they had the Easter egg hunt at the White House yesterday, which I thought was interesting. Have it the day after Easter. Don't have it on Easter. Have it on the day after Easter.
Well, why do you think they're doing that? Now, the Easter bunny is not sacred or holy.
No. Bill, it's not the Easter bunny. Joe officially named it yesterday the oyster bunny.
That's true, yeah. Well, you know, everybody knows that rabbits come from a shell in the sea.
Yes. Anyway, Al Roker asked him a very poignant, significant, and timely question. Listen.
Oh, okay. I don't know what the future holds, but what are your favorite memories about this place?
Our kids jumping in bed with us, our grandkids, when they're down here, just sneaking up and jumping in bed with us. That's my favorite memory here. They love it.
Okay, so he asked him, what's your favorite memory about the White House? And Biden's answer was, my grandkids jumping into bed with us. What was interesting, you know, this is the grandfather who still, I don't think, acknowledges. I think they technically acknowledged her finally because they were forced to. Navy, the child from the exotic dancer, I think in Arkansas.
What makes me sick is, he barely acknowledges Navy because he's been forced to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with it's...
You know, Bill, Navy didn't do anything wrong. All she did was be born, you know, and it was proven by DNA that she is the child of Hunter Biden. You would have thought that Joe Biden and Jill, you know, every woman.
They don't acknowledge. They don't want to. They, you know, it's the bastard. What I have a problem with is the mom, because the mom, going through everything, still supports. You know, maybe the child needs to be yanked away from her because, for everything she went through, she's got a screw loose.
Why?
You know, a couple of screws loose.
Well, I don't understand. Did she still support Hunter?
I heard that she was okay with him and okay with Joe, and I'm like going, what the hell?
Well, I haven't heard that. It wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think he's given any major support. As a matter of fact, I think he requested from the court a decrease in the amount of money he was giving to Navy. This is not a very good relationship. You know, they used to have, the Bidens had in the White House at Christmas time, stockings from all the grandchildren. All but Navy. So when they were forced to acknowledge Navy, instead of adding another stocking to the mantle, they stopped doing the tradition altogether and didn't have any stockings hanging on the mantle from any of the grandchildren. So they were going to show the world, you know, that either you acknowledge our preference or we don't do it at all, which is a shame. Anyway.
Well, you don't play favoritisms with kids like that. That's just wrong. Kids growing up, it's going to affect them. Mm-hmm. Now, Joe won't be around for the effect, but, you know, somebody will suffer from it because that's a child that's being hurt.
Joe was very confused at the Easter egg roll. By the way, in case you haven't been paying attention, the White House issued a ruling, an edict, saying you can come out and paint the Easter eggs with us, but no religious symbols on the eggs, no cross. I mean, after all, Easter isn't about the death of the Savior of mankind. No, Easter is about a bunny and some eggs, as far as the White House is concerned. You know,
or an oyster and some eggs. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it doesn't make any sense how these people. But I think that they have a disdain. I heard somebody who was a political prognosticator say yesterday that this White House, Biden, has shot himself so severely in the foot over the last weekend, you know, with going to New York City, being 30 minutes from the Diller funeral, the funeral home, and not going, not paying his respects. He could have gone up there, paid his respects, and gone back into New York, but no, he didn't even acknowledge it. He didn't even pick up the phone and call the widow by himself. He said to the mayor of New York, if you talk to her, give her my regards. That's essentially what Biden did. But by not going, he turned his back on every police officer in the country.
The question I have, should he have shown up? He should have picked up that phone and paid respects. And then, because he wasn't invited, and usually you don't go somewhere you're not invited, but he should have picked up the phone, made the effort. Then, you know, they would have said thank you, and, you know, there probably would have been the invitation, and he could have gone there. But no, he didn't do anything.
The Biden campaign.
Biden campaign
said this. Listen.
I don't think it was a deep personal connection between Donald Trump and Detective Diller that motivated Trump to attend the wake for this particular officer.
They were trying to diminish what Trump did. They were actually saying that it was a political move on Trump's part. Now, here is the priest who was in the funeral home when Trump entered. Listen.
You were there when President Trump walked into the funeral home at the wake. What was your interaction like?
So it was really beautiful. Stephanie introduced me to the president as the priest that married them. And I was able to just say, Mr. President, thank you for being here. Thank you for your goodness to this family. Would you be willing to pray with us? And he said, of course, Father Duffy. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, President Trump would like to pray with us. Let's all say an Our Father together. And the whole room, including the president standing right next to me, prayed an Our Father. And then I gave a blessing to everyone present through the intercession of Our Lady of Sorrows. And then the president so beautifully turned and kissed baby Ryan on the forehead, and the baby clapped at the president, and it just broke the tension. It was just such a beautiful, human, simple moment that meant so much to the family and so much to the people in that room.
Okay, that's what really happened in the funeral home, right?
Here's an interesting thing. The fact is, the closest thing to God is a baby. And when a baby sits there and Trump kisses it on the forehead, and it smiles and, you know, it giggles and, you know, and it's happy. Mm. You know, that's a sign, because the innocence of the baby, and it's trusting. And basically it just knows good, bad.
That's true.
And here you go. That doesn't happen with Biden. You know, kids kind of get this little fearful thing, because there's a time of innocence in a newborn and, you know, up to a couple of years old. Joe is very evil. And kids see that because they have natural radar, I guess is the only way I can put it. And that baby has got that. Now, with the Don being there, too, he just didn't go and show up like they were trying to say, well, you know, he did this as a political grandstand. He was invited.
Yeah.
He was invited. You know, whereas Joe was not. And Joe could have made the invitation for himself happen just by, you know, it was a police officer, so he should show his support, but he doesn't care about the police.
Well, you see what
the Democrats don't.
With Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, she by the way has vetoed pro-police legislation in New York several times, and the police are aware of it. So I think if anyone wanted to make political points, it was Kathy Hochul. The next day, at about the same time, 24 hours later, after Trump had paid his visit, the next day, Kathy Hochul shows up. It was a two-day wake, and she literally wasn't there 10 minutes. She got greeted by a representative of the family, who I think was a big, strong police officer in civilian clothes. And he essentially, it looked like he had some serious words with her. You know, she probably said, I'm the governor and I can be here and I have a right to. And I don't think it went over well with whoever was representing the family, because it was animated, to say the least. And eventually Hochul turned around and left the property. She wasn't welcome. As a matter of fact, I think one of the people in the funeral home said they heard the family, one of the family members say, "What is she doing here?" Meaning they weren't happy with the fact that Hochul had had stopped by. You know, you keep doing things against the police. You keep cutting back on their budgets. You keep minimizing the importance of the police. And after a while, it's going to come back and bite you, okay?
She was only there to politically grandstand, and they called it out. Now, what I would say is the gentleman that confronted her and probably had some not-so-nice words with her, she's vindictive. And, you know, if I were him, I'd watch my back, because she will sit there. If she feels that she was embarrassed, looked bad, or anything like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if he's a sergeant, he'll never make lieutenant, you know.
Oh, he might not make it to the end of the year, because something bad will happen. And that's just how they work. And I'm not trying to be a conspiracy guy or anything here. You go back and historically look, that's how they operate.
Yeah.
You kiss the hand, you don't kiss it, bye-bye.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with that police officer. I doubt we'll ever know, but who knows? But Hochul, she wasn't happy when she left that funeral home. You know, she was making an appearance, and I guess she figured everybody was supposed to bow, you know, at the royalty arriving, and they didn't bow. They did not bow. They were actually glad, I think, that she was escorted from the property.
I think it's funny.
Another thing that happened yesterday, Bill, not getting a lot of attention, really, is something which happened in the world. Did you see what happened in Syria yesterday? In Syria yesterday, they had an airstrike. Israel attacked and killed a terrorist. Well, it was an Iranian general. I got the report from Fox News, and it's worth listening to.
But first, let's get right to Trey Yanks. He's reporting live on the ground in Tel Aviv for us at this hour. Trey, what are you hearing from your sources about this strike?
Sandra, good afternoon. We are learning more about this rare daytime strike in Damascus, Syria, that killed top Iranian general Mohammad Zahedi. Zahedi is the man responsible for weapon shipments from Tehran to Damascus that are ultimately ending up in the hands of Hezbollah and used to target Israeli troops in the northern part of this country. According to initial reports, other members of Iran's IRGC were inside the building at the time of the reported Israeli strike. This is a significant development and one that will have repercussions across the Middle East. We are getting that statement in just now from Iran's ambassador to Syria, Hossein Akbari, who said the Iranian response to this strike will be, quote, swift, direct, and harsh. Zahedi is someone who is seen as a successor to other regional commanders who previously reported to Qasem Soleimani, that top Iranian general who was killed in the 2020 drone strike outside of Baghdad's international airport. He reported most recently to Ismail Khani, the leader of the Quds forces of Iran's IRGC. And the question now is how and if Iran will respond to this strike. They have a variety of options. And remember, Israel has been in direct and sustained conflict with Iranian proxies across the Middle East for the past 178 days. Overnight, a drone was launched, likely by an Iranian-backed Shia militia in Iraq, targeting the southern city of Eilat. More rocket fire from the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah today. And, of course, the ongoing war against Hamas and Islamic Jihad inside Gaza. Sandra?
Trey Yanks reporting live for us there on the ground, Tel Aviv. Thank you. John?
All right, Sandra, let's bring in Michael Allen, former senior director at the National Security Council under President Bush. First of all, do you think this was, in fact, Israel? There's been no proof that it is. The Iranians say it was. Syrians say it was. Israel's not saying anything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Israel. The United States has once or twice gone into this, but that was under previous administration. So I think it's definitely Israel.
All right. So what do you think the upshot of this is going to be? Killing a senior commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. I mean, this is reminiscent of when the U.S. took out Soleimani. There was a response against the al-Assad airbase. It was a brief response, and the only response, what do you think might happen here?
So I think they'll have to hit back when you have a senior Iranian intelligence official that's killed out in the battlefield. He's the chief liaison for Iran's terrorist network. Mm-hmm. He's the one that deals with Hezbollah, which is Israel's primary threat. So this is why Israel did it. They've got to keep their boot on the neck of their greatest foes, and that's, of course, Hamas and Hezbollah.
So how do you think Iran responds?
I think they'll launch some missiles by way of Hezbollah, probably into northern Israel. They're already doing a lot of that, but I think they'll hit more. I think they'll want something that's more than symbolic, but short of outright declaration of war with Israel, because neither Hezbollah or Iran want that.
There's been a lot of skirmishing across the northern border between Lebanon and Israel, but it's been relatively contained. There are elements inside Israel who are saying now is the time to go after Hezbollah.
Right.
Could this potentially erupt into all-out war with Hezbollah again for the first time since 2006 in a large scale?
It could. This is something we're all watching, which is what kind of scenarios might you have regional escalation? This is just the type of thing that we would look at. I still think the incentives for both parties, though, are not to have an outright war between the two. Iran wants to keep Hezbollah where it is. Mm-hmm. It wants to support Hamas, send some weapons over, but it wants to keep it there because if Iran ever was bombed by Israel, in other words, to go after their nuclear program, Iran wants Hezbollah there to be able to go back at Israel in that kind of scenario.
And Iran is at risk of losing Hamas, so I assume it doesn't want to lose Hezbollah as well.
That's
I want
right.
to ask you about this warning from retired General Frank McKenzie, who said that America could be in for an attack by ISIS in light of what happened last week in Moscow. Listen here.
I think the threat is growing. It's begun to grow as soon as we left Afghanistan and took pressure off ISIS-K. So I think we should expect further attempts of this nature against the United States as well as our partners and other nations abroad. I think this is inevitable.
So here's the scary thing. Some 8 million people have crossed the border illegally into the United States since Biden became president. Nearly a million of them so-called gotaways.
That's
we don't
right.
know who they are. We don't know where they went. I mean, what do you think the level of threat is potentially perpetrated by these gotaways against the U.S.
I think it's significant. I mean, the lesson of 2001 is that we have to be ever vigilant. We have to be overseas going after terrorist organizations so that all day long terrorists are worried about their survival, not building an external network to hit us in the United States or our allies in Europe. So we've got to stay on the offense to have a good defense.
All right. U.S. intelligence apparently warned Russia of a pending attack. Let's hope they've got a good intelligence of what's going on inside our country.
That's right.
Michael, thank you. Good to
thank
see you.
Appreciate it.
John Roberts, Sandra Smith, and Trey Yingst on Fox News talking about the attack yesterday in Syria by Israel. And, of course, Iran, the people in Iran ran out into the streets with their American flags and Israeli flags yesterday and were burning them as they do almost on cue when there's a situation that they don't like. And, of course, they screamed that we were the little Satan, Israel, and the great Satan, us. Where do you think this is going to go, Bill? What do you think? Is it going to lead to a... Are we going to go to a larger regional Middle East war?
Well, you know, with the attack, yeah, maybe so. But, you know, there was a prediction, and the bridge falls into that prediction. But, you know, we're already starting to kind of wash that away.
Oh, yeah.
And the significance of it. But let's just take a look at the week in general. We still got the bridge going on. Friday, you got the jobs report. Now, there are some that say it's not going to be good because there's massive layoffs going off in the United States. If it reflects that, then you're looking for the stocks to tank and a big crash. You know, but they say, you know, of course, you know, this is the Biden administration and yeah. everything is... You know, it's unfair to compare, you know, now to back when Trump was in. Everything is good. It's better off now than, you know, than we even think it is, you know. So, you know, I'm sure they're going to cook the numbers, you know, that you've got the deadline date of April 8th coming up on Monday. You know, of course, that's just the news of the eclipse. But then Sunday is the anniversary of the Hamas attack on Israel. You know, that time frame.
And 6 months, all right?
6 months, because it was October 7th.
Yep. Yeah.
So that would be, wouldn't that be 6 months?
Yep. Yeah.
And
yep.
the only reason that keyed me to that is my birthday's in October. It's October 5th. So I always know that, well, you know, I'm at that half year mark when I get to April 5th. So, you know, quick math, that means Sunday could be, it could be interesting between now and then, because people do follow a pattern.
It doesn't surprise me that things are starting to happen in the Middle East. I've been expecting, you know, think of how they have flipped the narrative. It was Israel that was savagely attacked by Hamas.
But now Israel is the aggressor.
Israel is the villain. They had the former Miss Israel was in New York making an appearance, and she was assaulted by pro-Palestinian people. And I think she was even struck at one point. And all she ever did was when she was in the Israeli Defense Force, she was a medic. She helped people. But that's beside the point. She was there to explain why Israel's doing what they're doing, and they would have nothing of it. They don't want to even hear it. They don't even want to discuss the possibility. So this is what's happening right now. You see college campuses. The support for the Jewish people is minimal. And yet, how many people on the campus are Jewish on most state schools? I find that amazing. How many of the Jewish alumni have given buildings to many of the major Ivy League schools, and yet they turn around and they literally slap the Jewish nation in the face? You know, Israel has a right to finish this because Hamas isn't going to go away. If they're talking about we want peace and a two-state solution, they want Gaza with Hamas, and they want Israel, and they want two states, and that's how they want it to end up. But if Israel does that, Hamas isn't going to go away. There will be another October 7th somewhere down the road, because when we were sending buckets of money to Gaza for aid to the Palestinian people, when we were sending UN aid to Gaza, most of that, went to Hamas. They intercepted it, and they kept it for themselves. And what did they do? They sold hate to their people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I think that this is not going to end well. I think that when I say not going to end well, no one's going to be happy with the end result, because if Israel continues to a victory, then the people of Gaza are going to be miserable, and a lot of people in the Middle East are going to be miserable. And if Israel were to capitulate to the will of the UN and to the Biden administration, then a lot of the people in Israel are going to suffer, because they're not going to be happy with just Israel as it is now. If they capitulate, it may be the end of Israel as we know it down the road. At least that's how I see it. What do you think?
Well, no, I agree with you. I agree wholeheartedly. And I just think, you know, that we're seeing a lot of things develop. There's the shoe is about to drop, you know. That's all I can say is, there's a lot of interesting things in development.
I pray for the people on both sides. The people on October 7th who were just getting up to have breakfast with their family, the kids who were at the music festival, they were just there to have a good time and socialize. It was a beautiful, sunny day, and all seemed well in the world, and in a matter of minutes, everything changed horribly for the people of that area, brutally, viciously, demonically. And we seem to have forgotten that as a world. We seem to have dismissed that. I mean, the United Nations seems to have put aside that horrible event like it didn't happen. Biden and his administration, who initially went over to Israel and said, "We got your back," within a matter of weeks, they realized, oh, wait a second, we put our finger to the air, and the breeze is going in another direction now, so we've got to change our stance on the Middle East.
And Joe is he's the poster child for a waffler, and Israel is not important to this country anymore because it's not important to Joe or the Democrats.
Yeah,
and that's all there is to it. And it doesn't matter that they are just, they were the ones that were villainized and attacked, or villainized, you know, they were
you would be amazed at how many people can't stand Bibi Netanyahu now. And I have always thought a lot of him. I know people who don't think well of Netanyahu. He's a guy, I don't know whether people realize this, but he has been before he was a politician, he was a soldier. He fought for Israel. He was in some very vicious battles for Israel. He risked his life. He lost his brother. His mm-hmm. brother was killed in Entebbe, the raid on Entebbe. And he's paid his dues. Yet he always represented, I thought, Israel on the world stage with dignity and with intelligence. And I always liked him. Now, I do know people who say it's all an act and he's brutal. I don't see that, but others do. But they're trying to make him out now as being a villain. You know,
well, you have the right to your opinion, but the unfortunate thing in this country, especially with the Democrat Party, they would say that about Republicans. But keep in mind, you folks control the media, and the media gives you your marching orders, and you don't question anything; you just go with it, and that is the problem right there. And you know, the media is the mouthpiece to the government. I mean, they control the media, they control the Postal Service. They control so many different aspects of this country. And then you got to wonder, are we going to have, if we have an election, come November, is it going to be a fair election?
I heard somebody say this morning that there's no way, and I agree, there's no way that Biden in a fair election can possibly win. That being said, the operative section of that thing is if in a fair election. And I don't think it's going to be another fair election. James Carville was asked about the Democratic position. Listen to what he said.
You know, I've been very vocal about this. It's horrifying. Our numbers among younger voters, Latinos or whatever, but whatever younger, I don't know, like younger people of color, particularly males. We're not shedding them. They're leaving in the droves.
He said, we're not shedding the younger people. They're leaving in droves.
You know, he's an old country boy, but if you listen to him, he wouldn't consider it. But the way he was talking about the races there, he's mm-hmm. prejudiced. He's a racist. And they are just subjects to, in his mentality, I'm not trying to put the guy down, you know, but he just sat there. He basically told me he's a racist.
The way he tried to describe the different minorities.
Mm-hmm.
He's a product of his, I guess, his upbringing. He sounds like a good old boy. By the way, did you happen to watch the LSU women's basketball team yesterday? They were playing in Albany, New York. It's March Madness. Mm-hmm. And the women, they left the court for the national anthem. And so that'll give you an idea of where some of these colleges are. LSU, you would think LSU would be...
That'd be a red state, so yeah.
Yeah, a southern school. You would think it would be more pro-American, but the women... left the basketball court for the national anthem. Now, the good news is they got their derrières kicked by the opposing team. I think it was Iowa. LSU girls left the court early on Monday night before the national anthem played in the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament in Albany, New York. They did not wait on the court for the national anthem. The Iowa Hawkeyes stood on the court alone while the anthem played, then went on and kicked LSU's derriere. So, justifiably so. And by doing that, this is what they said, by them not being there for the national anthem, the whole auditorium was rooting for Iowa. I think some LSU fans who had gone...
Well, you know, you got to wonder, how does a whole team... You can't believe that a whole team is woke like that, but apparently it was. Now, why? Is it the coaching? Is it the school? What is it? Because I used to live in Louisiana. I lived in Lafayette, Louisiana. And Baton Rouge is where LSU is.
Sure.
And Now, you got to remember, too, Louisiana, you know, and I lived in Shreveport, too. Louisiana, because Governor Edwards, mm-hmm. you know, the Democrats, it really was a Democrat state. It's turned red. There's a lot of conservatives there.
Right.
And that was a long, concerted effort. Good friend of mine, newsman, ended up being, you know, he's a Democrat, and he ended up, you know, ended up there in government. But more mainstream Democrat at the time, Edwin Edwards, he was sure. not a mainstream guy, but. You know,
well,
it is.
I mean,
the roots are still there.
I think it's the coach's responsibility to have your team in check. I think all the coach had to say before the game is, I don't want any demonstrations. If you demonstrate, I would have said to the players, if you demonstrate or embarrass our team in any way before this game starts, you won't play. And not only won't you play in this game, but if we make it to the next game, you won't play in the next game. Your season will be over. And that's all she had to do, and they wouldn't have had an issue. So I would submit that she probably condoned what they did.
Well, you know, there's a problem, you know, because in the United States, you have the right to feel how you want to feel. We're a touchy-feely nation. And so any other country, you better salute their flag. You better sing their national anthem. Our country, hey, if you don't want to, it's okay. It's cool with us. And that allows people to, Democrats have taken hold of that. Well, you don't want to salute the flag. You don't want to sing the national anthem, you know. They push that agenda because it benefits them. It you know, they want votes. That's all they want. They just want to get votes. And they don't care how they dismantle this nation to get it, because it's about power. They don't want conservative values. They don't want the Constitution.
Well, let's look at what happened up in New York. You know, one of the fire companies, I think Engine 11, up in, mm-hmm. in New York. They were one of the responders on 9/11, and they lost some of their men. So they have a flag that is specific to their engine company. It's an American flag in black and white with a red stripe in the middle of it, you know, and that signifies the loss that they suffered during 9/11. Well, a socialist politician in New York complained about it, said that she didn't like the flag. It was a fascist flag, she said, and she wanted it removed. And initially, she got her way. Initially, they called the fire company and said, we have a rule. You can't have any other flag other than an American flag on a truck, so you have to remove it. And they explained that that's not just a flag. That's a flag that honors our fallen. And we've had it for two decades. And we don't want to remove it, but they did. But fortunately, the commissioner of the fire department in New York reversed the decision and said, no, come to think of it, you've had that for a while, and we know the reason for that flag, and you can keep it. So they now have the flag back. And now that socialist politician is saying, well, I didn't really mean it that way. I've always had a really good relationship with the engine company 11. I mean, even though she was the instigator, because she lost out, she was trying to smooth the waters out, you know? Well, we're really good friends. And
they'll lie on Twitter. Joe Biden's doing that, yeah. You know? You know, over the weekend, you know, when he sat there and claimed, what is it, diversity,
Transgender Visibility Day.
Everybody saw it, everybody heard it, and now he's saying he didn't do
it. No, he said to a reporter, the reporter said, what do you think about the turmoil you've caused by making Easter Sunday Transgender Visibility Day? And Biden said, and I haven't got the audio, but I heard him say it. He said, oh, I didn't say that. And then the reporter said, well, Speaker Johnson said he's upset with you doing that. And Biden said, the speaker is misinformed. Mind you, there is a proclamation that was sent around to all of the media, signed mm-hmm. by, the proclamation is written on White House stationery and signed by Joseph R. Biden, President yeah. of the United States.
We all saw it. The media talked about it all weekend long. But have you noticed now? You supposedly you can't scrub things from searches, but you'll have a hard time finding it now.
Yeah, you know, Bill, that's interesting. You should say that. They're getting a little more tech savvy, I think, in getting rid of stuff.
They've always been tech savvy, and you know, you look at and I look at Facebook and Zuckerberg, and you know, I consider him an agent of the federal government. Because there are things that you can be banned for. And, you know, you have the right to argue this, but it's a checkoff box and none of the things answer, hey, you know, whatever, you know, the real reason to it. And they won't get back to you. They're judge, court, jury, the whole nine yards, and you have no say.
Yeah.
And they change it. And you got to wonder, where is this going to end? Because you can't sit there and talk about conservative values, but somebody can sit there and disrupt this country, talk about things, talk about, and look, if you're a transgender and that's how you feel, that's your privilege. But don't preach it to me that it's natural and it's normal and that, you know, we're all transgender children. We're not.
You know, there was a time in our society, as most of my life, when people who had problems, emotional problems or mental problems, were treated for their problems. If they had depression, bipolar depression, they would treat it. In this world we're living in now, they're not treating the issue.
They're running the asylum.
They're making it sound as if it's okay to have that problem. We had this clown, and I'm sorry, I cannot take Rachel Levine seriously. We had him come out and say this over the weekend.
Today marks Transgender Day of Visibility. Each year on March 31st, we celebrate transgender Americans and all that they have accomplished. We honor the many contributions transgender Americans make in health, medicine, public service, and across our nation. At the Department of Health and Human Services, our mission is to improve the health and well-being of all Americans, including transgender Americans. From promoting access to high quality care, to addressing health disparities, to developing policies that improve reproductive health care, to ensuring transgender youth have access to 988 program counselors with professionals trained to work with them. Achieving health equity is our commitment, a commitment to all. On this Transgender Day of Visibility, we must continue to make focused and ongoing efforts to end inequities, eliminate the impacts of injustice, and improve access to care for everyone. Today of all days, I stand proud and visible with my fellow transgender Americans. Happy Transgender Day of Visibility.
That's Rachel Levine. And all of his splendor, her splendor, its splendor.
I don't know. I don't know what Rachel's celebrating because Joe never declared that.
Yeah, well, I guess they wanted to have it very, you know, backed up by Rachel. Rachel, I think it's amazing. For 53 years of his life, he dressed in a suit, was called Richard. He has, I believe, children. I think sons. I could be wrong, but he has children. And he lived, quote, a normal life, though apparently he liked his wife's clothing. Well, now he can wear it all the time. You know, he so proudly walks around in the admiral's uniform.
Yeah.
I don't think he's seated. I don't think he's seen a dinghy. Okay,
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is he's a piece of work. So what is
apparently
Biden?
Seeing, yeah.
What does Biden do? I know where you're going, Bill. Be nice.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. In all honesty, Biden takes him and says, oh, he's perfect to be part of the Health and Human Services.
Yeah, but, you know, was Biden always this way, or is it convenient for him now to be this way? Or, you know, I think Biden just wants, you know, there's the old Mickey Mouse story, you know, at you know, the three sons, and the, you know, the dad said, what do you want, to the one son? He goes, well, you know, I want to be a business owner. He went bottom of business, and the other son kind of the same thing. And, you know, and he bought him something big, and, you know, the other one sat there and said, well, you know, I want to go to Disneyland. So he bought him a Mickey Mouse outfit. And, you know, and there's, you know, Biden would.
If you took somebody like Rachel Levine 40 years ago, you would treat him for some kind of a problem that he has. Okay, that's how they would have society wouldn't have said, oh, you think it's okay to prance around in a woman's outfit and call yourself a woman, even though your XY chromosomes and say and you know the package that God gave you say otherwise. Okay. I mean, society right now is doing nothing to help these people. Society is actually saying, yeah, you think you're this? Fine, you're that. Society, it's like somebody saying, you know, I think I can fly that airplane. Well, you've taken no lessons. Yeah, but I woke up this morning and I had a real good dream and I was flying that airplane, so I think I can fly that airplane. Well, then you just go over in that airplane and you fly it because you think you can. You think you're a pilot? Well, you fly that airplane. Okay. I mean, that's the world we're living in right now. We don't look to heal anybody. We look to make them feel that they are what they think they are, even if they're not. You know, I heard somebody say that they don't want, I think it was the driver's licenses in Washington or Oregon, one of the northwestern states. They don't want to put the sex of the driver on the license on the birth certificate until they're old enough to decide what they want to be. They don't want to put on the birth certificate male, boy. They want to say John Doe born or baby Doe born, whatever. You know, they want to name the child but not name the sex.
Yeah, so God doesn't have a say in it.
Well, you have to believe in God, Bill, and I would submit that many of the people who are pushing this whole agenda
think they are God.
Well, they think they are, and they don't believe in the one we believe in. How's that? I mean, how do you turn around on Easter Sunday, like Biden did, that good, devout Catholic, and say, it's Oyster Sunday, and we will have no religious symbols on the Easter egg roll? Because, after all, Easter isn't about Christ. Easter is about the bunny and the eggs.
Well, I'll argue with you on one thing. You said he sold out his soul.
Yeah, I said that yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think he has one. I don't think he had one for a long time, if he ever had one.
Well, I think he's a guy. I think he has always been a guy who's been after one thing: money,
and money, power, and that's it. And,
yeah. If the devil came along to this guy somewhere along the line and said, "Look, I can make all your dreams happen. I can give you everything you want. I can give you money. I can give you the presidency. I can give you power. All you have to give me is your soul." I think this guy would have agreed to the deal.
So he met the devil at the crossroads, and he made his deal.
It sure seems that way from an observation point outside of that relationship.
Yeah, he wanted to be a blues player, and he is. He's given everybody the blues.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Interesting little story coming out of Texas. Just when you thought it was safe to breathe that
magistrate?
Fresh air. Pardon?
Talking about the magistrate down there?
No. I got that, too. Texas Department of State Health Services issued a health alert after confirming the first human case of the novel avian influenza in the state. The infected individual fell ill after coming into contact with dairy cows believed to be carrying the avian flu, which with conjunctivitis being the primary symptom reported. The incident marks only the second time the avian influenza virus has been identified in a human being in the United States. The case is linked to recent findings of the virus in dairy cows, as announced by the Texas Animal Health Commission. So obviously somebody who was...
Have you noticed the uptick in diseases, things that shouldn't be, that we are inoculated from in the United States? They are gone. Now we're falling victim to it all over. I mean, there's case after case of different things that we never had to worry about. Now they're reaching to the point of becoming an epidemic, proportion, and conveniently too, before the election. I mean, we're going to have to vote from home. You know, and, you know, there's going to be mail-in ballots. You're going to have, you know, weeks to get your stuff in, weeks before and after, whatever it takes just to make sure that Joe wins. You know, I mean, it's crazy.
That's right. They will stop. One of the key signs that something's afoot, as they would say in a Sherlock Holmes novel, that if they stop the counting at 10:30 at night in all the different states and decide they'll come back in the morning, we'll come back in the morning and resume counting. When they when they do that, odds are they're shipping in the ballots from the different warehouses.
You don't do that. You don't do that. I was involved in a case one time, and we had a hung jury at 10 o'clock at night, and the judge said, you know, I'm going to call this. Hung jury, that's it. You know, which meant, yeah, I could come back to trial, and I'm sitting there going, hey, that's a good thing. Let's get the hell out of here. And, you know, the other, you know, the guy that was really, you know, the lawyer in the case is going, no, I think we ought to let them rest overnight and come back. And I'm going, that's not a smart move. It's not a smart move. Sure as hell, coming up the elevator, you know, in the morning, you know, you have the sea hag there along with some of the jury members. And they're all smiling stuff. They all went out to breakfast on the other side. It was amazing. And then, you know, they came in and the judge said, well, you know, I'm going to adjourn you guys to go deliberate. No, we've already come to a conclusion. Of course they did. Over breakfast.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good outcome. I'm sitting there going, well, could have settled this last night.
You saw it at 10:30 at nighttime. We saw the count when you went to bed on election night in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I think it was up by like 800,000 votes for Trump.
It was somewhere around 1:30 in the morning it changed, you know, and the funny thing is that same tactic. Well, you know, everybody can go home. You know, we'll resume in the morning, except for the little crew that stayed behind, and out come the boxes. Boom, boom, out go the lights, and, you know, here come the...
No one ever explained how there were 200,000 more votes than registered voters in the state of Pennsylvania. I mean, they actually came up with that conclusion, 200,000 more votes than there are registered voters.
We're not the only state where that happened, but they don't want to talk about that.
Right. Well, anyway, on Sunday also from the state of Texas, El Paso magistrate Judge Humberto Acosta ordered the release of a large group of illegal immigrants accused of participating in a violent encounter with the National Guard troops along the Rio Grande. You saw that on a video a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason that he used, number one, Humberto Acosta, and, you know, they say a judge, he is a magistrate. He's a freaking magistrate. And when you become a magistrate, that doesn't mean, you know, you or I could be illegal, you know, become a magistrate. And as a matter of fact, if you get elected in or appointed in, you only have to take a 10-day course.
You don't have to be a college graduate to be a magistrate.
No, you don't. Anybody can do it. It's a good-paying job. It's pretty easy. Kind of, you almost dictate your own hours, when you will be there or not. And, you know, like I said, good-paying job.
Yeah.
10 days. You go to school for 10 days. You're going to learn everything you need to know about the law, the Constitution, judging, and everything like that. Uh-huh. Now, his reasoning for it is, well, you know, there were a lot of people that charged the border. And, you know,
I think he said they had, 48 hours to get
the due process thing. But, you know, number one, do you have a right if you're, they are undocumented people. Well, they're undocumented illegal aliens. Let's just be right about this. And they charged they stormed the gates. So that's an attack. You know, they can stand and wait a trial. You know, you could sit there and bring them all in a room. You know, you guys are all being held, blah, 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 this, you know, and that's it. But apparently, you know, they're trying to go on a technicality. It was done on a Zoom phone call. And I ordered the immediate release on their own, you know, their own accountability. And so out they go. You think they're going to be back in court? Hell no.
Yeah. Hold your breath. Yes.
And remember, the key word there, undocumented. So they're undocumented. How do you know what you got on them is real?
Don't you love how you give them... You give illegals, people who are not citizens of our country...
They got more rights than you. They got more money than you.
Well, you heard yesterday, we had a story yesterday about illegals are getting eight times, per person, eight times what the families of the veterans are getting. So you go over and you get shot at, and in some cases you get wounded terribly, and you get a certain level of income, right? If you come into the country, you're not a citizen, you're not documented, you could have, you may have even lied about who you are and where you're from. We still will give you seven times what we're giving our own veterans. Think about that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They're talking about everybody wants to live to be old, but it's going to cost you $2.3 million to live to be 100 years old because of inflation, Bidenomics, and everything like that.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of worse than that because, you know, we're already trillions of dollars in debt and we keep adding to it, you know. But the real thing that's out there that I would worry about is all the states that are on the verge of bankruptcy. Ironically, maybe except for one on this list, they're blue states. But if I told you that 20% of the nation's states are about to go, or 20% of the country is about to go belly up,
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, you got Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Alaska. I think that is a red state, theoretically. New York, New Jersey, Hawaii, New Hampshire, Vermont, Illinois, Maryland, Delaware. You add California to that list and it goes on. But right there is a little bit over, I think, 20%. So you're sitting there going, wait a minute, what?
Well, how do you support, like, let's take Massachusetts, for example.
They're number one on the list.
They are so in debt. They have welcomed every illegal they could get their hands on. Every illegal that came into the country must have gotten a special printed invitation to go to Massachusetts. And so, they've, like New York, they have kicked veterans out of homes and, apartments so that they can move illegals into them.
Mm-hmm.
And without any, Maura Healey should be ashamed of herself. She's the governor of the state of Massachusetts, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and they have given them every perk and every benefit they could possibly give them. The people of Massachusetts are footing the bill. So it doesn't surprise me, Bill, that they're going broke.
What? Yeah, and, well, you know, a lot of the conservatives from this state is a Democrat state, and it will stay a Democrat state. It will be more Democrat, and the left will brag about it. And I'm sure any federal relief will go to Democrat states before Republican states. But right now, Republicans are moving out of, like, Mass. I'm not from Massachusetts. I come up and visit, you know, I spend time up here, but I'm the other Commonwealth state, and I live in
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and Pennsylvania is probably on that list too. I didn't go that deep, but I said, well, when you get to 20%, you're going, that's a problem. If all these states are on the verge of bankruptcy, they just haven't really filed it yet. What's that going to do to the national economy that's already in the toilet?
Boy, we live in strange times.
How are we going to bail them out? And you know, the people that are going, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. You know, these states are going to sit there and say, well, you were a citizen of this state, even if you were there for a very short period of time. I know Pennsylvania used to do that on, you know, people would sit there and their inheritance tax. You know, I moved to Florida. Well, you know what? Your citizenship of this state follows you to where you are, so you still owe us taxes. I don't know if they still do that, but they used to, you know.
You know, we haven't mentioned this, but the Biden administration over the weekend put severe restrictions on gas combustion and diesel combustion trucks.
Yeah.
You have a truck, for example, Bill, and I would imagine it would have an effect on a vehicle like yours, too, down the road. They're going to make it more difficult for you to drive your pickup truck. And of course, if you have a big rig, you know what that's going to do. But they're also saying that by 2030, we've got to transition, all of us, to electric vehicles. Now,
we're not ready for that.
No, but if you have an internal combustion engine car, you can have it, and you can buy a used internal combustion engine car. But what they want by 2032, they want to make it so the car companies are no longer selling new internal combustion cars by that time frame. By 2030.
Well, you know, they talk about, well, you know, it's a lie that the gas prices are up. You know, they're $3.50 a gallon. Well, we were down to about a buck.
Yeah.
Or a little bit over $2, I think, you know, during the Trump era. So, you know, things were better. They did a thing on grocery prices. I think we talked about it yesterday, what would have normally cost you $17 during the Don years, during the Joe years, it's 26, almost $27. And you're telling me, well, you know, the sky is blue, you know, the grass is green, everything is great in Joe Land. No, it's not. Don't quit lying right about it.
No, they actually ignore the fact that, for example, it takes fuel to power the machinery that makes the batteries. It takes oil and it takes gasoline to the motors that make these different pieces. You know, for cars, for example. They're powered by electricity, which is powered by coal, which is a pollutant, they say. Doesn't make any difference. It's a scam. Yeah. I heard something on over the weekend on you know, these windmills you see out in the ocean and stuff like that. You see them in farms along the highways in like Pennsylvania. You'll see these wind farms that supposedly generate electricity. And people say, oh, isn't that great? That's so environmentally perfect. Do you know that one of the big ingredients in those windmills is oil? They need oil, the lubricant oil, to work properly.
For the bearings in turn, yeah.
And we're not talking about, you know, a little squeaker can. We're talking gallons and gallons of oil to make those windmills work. I also heard something I wasn't aware of. They have to replace the blades on those windmills every year. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Every year they got to replace the blades.
Think about how big they are and what they span, and then you have the pressure, you know, the different pressures of the wind on them. Yeah, they're structurally, they're a problem. Now, they did create an industry for those windmills out
there.
And that's the ships that go out and service. Oh, wait, they run on fossil fuel.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, they made an industry, right? A lot of those blades that we see out there in those wind farms are made in China.
Yeah.
They're shipped over, and then we have them here on our farms.
Our domestic output, where is it right now? We don't make as much stuff, right?
Oh, no. We don't make anywhere near as much as we used
to.
You know,
China is hitting a record high of their productivity and their output. You know, so this administration has done everything it can to help China.
Yeah.
And yet it's Trump that's in bed with the Chinese.
Yeah.
But Joe has, well, we don't produce gas anymore.
Right.
We import it. You know, we've cut construction jobs, pipeline jobs, you name it, we've cut it. But, you know, I don't know.
Bill, we have one of the most technologically savvy countries on the planet. And we even talked about this in the past. There are alternative engines that we've actually developed that are far more environmentally friendly than the electric motor with those big lithium batteries. Mm-hmm. For example, there's a hydrogen engine. Hydrogen engine, which the only byproduct from this engine is water. It spits water out the exhaust pipe.
It's renewable energy is what you're trying to say.
Yes. So why can't we develop this into a motor that's effective in the future? You know, I mean, we have got a great country with some of the most innovative engineers and scientists on the planet, and you can't tell me that this engine, this electric engine, is the ultimate solution. Because everywhere I look at it, you know, they talk about, you have to replace the batteries, and the big expense on the electronic vehicles is the batteries. It's going to cost you, if it's a $50,000 or $60,000 car, it's going to cost you $35,000 every 5 years to replace the batteries on these cars. And by the way, they're so darn heavy that they're going to cause damage to the bridges and to the roads, the infrastructure. You know, if you get hit by one of these cars, it's not going to be like getting hit by a regular vehicle, which is bad enough. It's going to be like being hit by a battering ram, you know, because they're so heavy. So, I mean, this doesn't seem to be the answer, but this administration, it's like they're holding us down on the ground. They have pried open our mouth and they're shoving it down our throat.
Well, they're racing against time because, you know, you've got everything that's going on. You've got the economic numbers that they're trying to hold on to and lie about everything. I mean, we're being told by the news, oh, everything's great. Don't believe what you think you know. Believe what I tell you. And so they're doing that. We've got a fuel crisis here. Most people don't realize that the trucking industry is on its back and it's dying, gasping for air because of things that have happened during the Biden administration. You've got warehouse supplies down.
Yeah.
We are at the point to where, you know, I would get ready for it. You remember when the pandemic hit and toilet paper was gone?
Yeah.
Well, forget about toilet paper. You know, now look, if we can't get things trucked in, bottled water will go up. You won't bottled water. You won't be able to get freeze-dried food. You won't be able to get regular food. Talk about the cattle industry now having, being infected with disease ever since the immigration. Who knows how that goes together, but it does. So we won't be able to get anything that we need, the fruits and vegetables. I'm just saying, you know, we are going to be foodless.
We take for granted. Things are so easy nowadays. We can get in our car, we can drive to the local supermarket, walk in, and get just about anything we want. It's at arm's reach. Oh, I'll take that can of this. I'll take this over here. Oh, that chicken looks good. You know, but what you're saying is true. If the trucking industry collapses, imagine no cans, no chicken, nothing. Empty, just empty stores.
What are you going to eat?
What the hell are we going to do as a country if we don't?
And if you can't buy clean bottles. Look, let me be honest about it. You know, people go, well, I got tap water. All right. You know, you talk about states and cities that sit there and go, well, you know, the pipes and stuff are crudded. Have you ever worked on a house and taken plumbing and there's that orange light built inside of the pipe? That's kind of a natural thing that happens when we run through. And our system is old. So, you know, there's crap and yuck in our I wouldn't drink out of the
tap. I replaced a heating, what do you call it, a tank, heater tank, a water heater. That's what they call it. I replaced a water heater about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was new to the house when we got it. So it's about 12 years old, gone past its lifestyle. But it hadn't broken. It was just too old to trust, so we replaced it. And when we took it outside and we drained it, a creamish crud came out of the base of the water heater. And the guy said, that's in all of them. I said, well, what is it? He says, it's just a pollutant. It's just in the water. And
yeah,
it just,
so the water, naturally over time. And as a matter of fact, if you ever notice that your water tank is not producing the hot water.
Yeah.
It may not be the heating. It might be just that, you know, it's plugged up with crap, you know, and, you know, I mean, there's dirt. You ever see a road crew go, we're fixing a water main? Well, they fix it, you know, ground, earth, dust,
and asphalt, the first thing they'll say to you, by the way, when they fix it, if it's between the source and your house,
don't drink that water.
Let it go for a while. Run the water until it's clear because it's filled with, like you said, crud.
Yeah.
By the way, you know where the word crud came from? This is a Harrington piece of drivel. It's a sidestep as we go down this little road of life. CRUD stands for, it used to be an acronym for the Charles River Underwater Debris. CRUD. In the Charles River in Boston, when they were dredging it, there was a lot of garbage on the bottom of it. You know, because it's an old river, and the colonial times they used it, and they used to throw all their stuff. Tea Party, they threw other things in there, and it sank to the bottom. So when they were dredging it back, I guess in the 1800s, they had a lot of crud on the bottom. They would put it on the barges, and they would say, "What's on that barge?" Oh, it's just a lot of crud, and that's where the term came from. I just thought I'd pass that on to you. So now, if you ever are playing in Trivial Pursuit, you know,
no, you know,
that question comes along, you got the answer.
I'll never get that question, so I don't have to worry about it. I'm not going to, you know.
That's true.
Superfluous information that I don't need. But, you know, if you're a Democrat, you want that superfluous Joe Biden information.
Oh, Joe would like it. Joe, yeah.
Yeah, he, that's, yeah. They
he wouldn't remember it, but he'd like it.
Yeah, well, yeah. He would, yeah. He would have crazy things. Hey, you know, there was a political matchup. You know, they have all these hypothetical matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats are doing it a lot. You know, the Trump against Joe, Trump wins. Then, now, you know, Michelle against Trump. Trump won big. And I'm sitting here going, well, why are they doing these political matchups? Because, yeah, they're, you know, the word is Joe's not going to make it to, you know, the election, or they need something to carry it over. Kamala doesn't do it either. And I'm sitting there going, and then they ask the, and I thought that was interesting, the office of Michelle. She was the first lady or first guy, whatever
well,
she was.
I mean.
Why does she have an office? What does she do? Hey,
everybody,
she has the,
everybody has an
the office.
Office
of.
Well, you know, she's a big producer. By the way, I think this is the month when that other great motion picture is coming out about the demise of our country. It's called Civil War.
Yeah.
I think it's happening in April, and so that'll be something to look forward to. So if you are depressed and if you think the world is going to hell in a handbasket, you might want to avoid this movie, because it's going to say, yeah, you're right, it is.
No, it actually is going to predict what happens next. You know, playing, you know, like this, the last one had planes dropping out of the sky, ships hitting bridges.
Yeah, don't remember the Tesla. I'm surprised that Elon Musk didn't sue them for that, because they had empty driverless Teslas on a rampage. Remember they were driving into an exit ramp and smashing, and
it would run everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I think that's about it for the show. I think we can wrap this one up. If you want to contact us, our number is 833-538-7868, 833-538-7868.
Mail at itsanotherday.com, mail at jimandbill.com, and jimandbill@mail.com. And I think
that's about it, Bill. I think only thing left is for your wild and wonderful ending.
Wild and wonderful ending. You mean hasta la vista, baby? We're out of here?
That's it.
This is CRN America.